What's up, everybody? We are back again with another episode of Octagon Control. We missed you guys last week, but it was Thanksgiving, so I hope you can forgive us. However, we are back again in studio. Myself, Nikolai Gianti, alongside my co-host, Chris Manning. And obviously, we missed the Ultimate Fighter finale, but I think there are still a lot of things to talk about. But first, how was your Thanksgiving, Chris?
It was good. You know, another year, another like year that was, you get to go home, which is always nice. Got to watch the fights kind of side by side with a pretty interesting Cavs game on Saturday. So, you know, good, really exciting fight of nights that set plus Saturday.
And there was, before we get to the Ultimate Fighter that happened a couple weeks ago, there was an announcement. There will be, I know I've been saying I wish it could happen, a sort of UFC channel that will show fights, the Ultimate Fighter, prelims, and it will be sort of a paid subscription, I assume, like MLB TV or Sunday Ticket or NBA TV, something to that line. I really like it from a person in college who doesn't get all those premium channel standpoint. And I know a lot of people are still sort of switching off the cable thing to the internet TV, so I do think this is a good idea.
Yeah, let's see how much it costs. Let's see what kind of events are going to be available. And, you know, for me, I'm like, we're both diehard fans, but also if sometimes with the amount of cards they're saying they're going to run for next year, which will be more than, I can't remember the exact number, so once
45,
like,
I believe.
Yeah, something like that. And when it's, like, anywhere that's not stateside, you always get, like, a lot of guys that are, like, local Brazilians or local guys that are fighting for the first time. My interest isn't as high, you know?
But you will be able to watch video on demand, which is nice.
Yeah, and, you know, well, we're going to pick them later, but, like, for example, this fight card that's taking place, we're recording, like, right before it in Australia, this is the kind of fight card that's, if it's overseas, that I get really interested in, but some of the Brazilian ones, we'll see, but if it is in the channel and it's moderately priced, I do agree with you. I do think it could be a good thing.
However, let's get to the most recent Ultimate Fighter finale. I think there are a few fights that really stick out from that event. Obviously, Gray Maynard looked impressive. Nick Diaz looked impressive in his victory. But I would also argue that everyone of the Ultimate Fighters that they chose to perform on this card, I think from an MMA and sort of a being understanding the technical, not just, oh, this person got knocked out, but the victors in these fights looked very good. And I would even argue someone like Roxanne Modafferi looked good in her fight. Who, besides the obvious Nate Diaz, for the Ultimate Fighter winners, which one were you more impressed with? Juliana Pena or Chris Holdsworth?
This is kind of an interesting question, I think, because Juliana Pena was fighting someone named Jessica Rakosi, who she just whooped in a round, but also in her record going into the fight was 1-3. So, you know, for me, Juliana Pena to me is interesting. I do think she has a bright future. She definitely is gonna have some beef with Rousey. That's gonna, like, if she can win some fight ticket and sell that, but I got to go with Chris Holdsworth. Fighting at Team Alpha Male, another submission. Just finish all of his fights as a professional, if I'm not mistaken. You know, and again, he's training out of the best camp for younger fighters. He looks good. He's a big, turned into a Condor at 5'11". I love what I've seen out of Chris Holdsworth. And he was a guy I was really looking at coming into the season. My hopes for him are even higher coming out.
Yeah, he looked outstanding. And, you know, he went into the season as this Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. Yeah. What we sort of didn't acknowledge is the fact that he's an alpha male fighter. They've been with Dwayne Ludwig, and Dwayne Ludwig has done wonders for Team Alpha Male. Holdsworth, just sort of another impressive young fighter. You know, they just have a lot of guys.
And they're without a doubt camp of the year.
They are. There's no doubt. Pena, she has a bright future. There's no doubt about that, but you do bring up the fact she was going up against someone who's been a professional boxer all her life. It's hard to break those habits, and it's hard to still learn a ground game and set up your footwork to where you can avoid the ground game. She was overpowered at 135 pounds. That was obvious. Now, for me, when I look at the other two fights between Jessamine Duke, Peggy Morgan, Roxanne Modafferi, Raquel Pennington, I think Raquel Pennington has a very bright future in this sport. She is a brawler. She's strong. She's big for the weight class. There's no doubt about she's going to be in some fun fights. She loves to bring it. Jessamine Duke, that Muay Thai is vicious. And you know, she's still learning to use her reach, I would argue. And that's something that's going to help her. She's 5'11", I think, at 135 pounds. I mean, that's unbelievable. And I guess sort of my other takeaway from this event, and I don't know if you agree with me, maybe the Ultimate Fighter as a whole. It was the first women's season. And we saw, you know, Shayna Baszler, who I hope gets a shot in the UFC.
Yeah,
Roxanne Modafferi, she got her shot. It sucks that we had to see these guys come in so late in their career. You know, Modafferi's lost her last six fights, seven if you count the Ultimate Fighter loss. Shayna Baszler got knocked out in the first round, knocked out from a losing standpoint,
yeah.
Not from a she got knocked out, she got submitted, but she lost in the first round of fights. And you do have to wonder what it would have been like had we seen these fighters in their prime of their career. You know, Shayna Baszler was, she's a Josh Barnett protege. She's one of the few female catch wrestlers. And, you know, she's, if you've watched any of her fights, she's a very impressive fighter. Even when she got beat by Cyborg, she looked decent in the first round. You know, she was obviously overpowered at 140 pounds, but she was a talented fighter, and I think we saw that a lot. Right now, we sort of saw the grooming of the young guys, and maybe this can sort of be what the Ultimate Fighter 1 was for the UFC, for women's UFC.
Yeah, I think some of the differences are, though, that you have fighters that are kind of, like, established, and at least even back then, like, we look at guys like Koscheck and Liebig and Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner, like, having these long careers now, but they didn't have those then, and for me, like there's the opportunity for maybe the Jessamine Dukes and the,
yes,
and the Pages. And for me, I think when they do it again, maybe if they can get a, if they can kind of do, I wouldn't want to see Rousey coach again. I don't think. I think
Jessica
I. I mean, you never, or even if they just, I'm kind of starting to think that maybe Tough would be best served in using, not maybe using kind of guy, like picking fighters based on like their coaching ability as well as like their, like Chael. You can't have him do it all the time, but
outstanding coach.
Great coach.
You know, I bet Frankie's going to be a very good coach,
yeah,
too. BJ's not a good coach.
But he does have, you know, he does have Andre Penderis, you know, from Nogueirão, so I'm fairly confident what he's going to bring. But just in general, I think once you get some interesting more people in there and you kind of do this again with just the women, because Chris Holdsworth doesn't get gets the UFC probably eventually, but not now, but it might have been better served with just women, and we don't really know that now. It's kind of hard, easier to say that in hindsight, 2020, but maybe you get more coming out of it. And it's not like they brought everyone back either. There's a lot of, I don't remember all the names, but I couldn't tell the percentage, but there's a lot of women that didn't end up making it to this point, and that, at least with Tough One, look how many guys' careers were based off that season.
Right. Now, Nate Diaz.
Whoo, buddy.
Looked impressive, very impressive in that fight.
And people were saying, vintage Nate Diaz? That's better than vintage Nate Diaz.
And here's the thing, you're gonna see, you know, these flashes, and then you're gonna see the ones where you sort of just shake your head and question what's going on with him. He looks good at 155 pounds. He's a top 5 155er. I don't think he'll ever hold a belt at 155 pounds. Anthony Pettis, I think, would walk through him. If Gilbert Melendez holds the belt, he'll never fight him. That's an issue for a different day. 170, he does not belong at. We've seen him whipped around like a rag doll before. I believe Dong Young Kim actually beat him also. So
Rory, those are also huge 170 pounders that are at the top of the weight class.
Yeah. And he has a real problem with guys that can wrestle. Gray Maynard strayed away from his wrestling, so that's why I don't like to sort of point to him as sort of this prototypical wrestler. I mean, he hasn't utilized it in his recent bouts since he realized I can put leather on people.
Maybe
and knock
since
people out.
The. I want to say maybe the Kenny Florian fight. It was the last time we saw him really just use takedowns and kind of grind someone out.
Yeah, and, you know, Nate's going to have trouble with those wrestlers. And Johnny Hendricks would put him on his back. Obviously, George St. Pierre would.
And even at 155 pounds, you saw Ben Henson.
Yeah.
Ben Henderson did it for five rounds. And that's, even if he's not the champion right now, he's still the number yeah. two guy.
So he's in a limbo, and it's all going to come down to if Gilbert Melendez wins the belt. If you want something out of your career and you want those big fights, eventually you're going to have to fight him. You know, friends fight friends. We've seen it before. Sometimes with falling outs like Rashad Evans and John Jones. But we've even seen guys like Melvin Gallard and and Donald Cerrone fight and be friends after, and one of them got knocked out. It's doable. It's a sport. It's a paycheck. You aren't on the street where you're beating each other up. This is a job. This is a career. I think Chael put it best when he said, you wouldn't see a football game where a wide receiver and a cornerback played together in college and said, oh, nope, we're not going to play today.
Yeah, but I think one of the differences that
you get punched in the face.
Yeah,
in
and MMA. It's man on man. It's not like you have like 10 other guys. It's you're going head to head. I think Nate Diaz and his relationship with Gilbert Melendez, the whole entire Gracie family is like a very much more tight knit feeling than I ever felt we got out of Jones and Evans. I feel like they had a good relationship, but never like the brother kind of thing. You never saw instead of breaking down his fight, him just saying that's the best. You never saw Rashad Evans go, me and him are gonna run this division that Nate Diaz did. It's moving forward for him. I don't know where you exactly would rank him, but I would say the top guys at the UFC right now, off the top of my head, and this is probably close to the ranking. You have Pettis obviously at the top, Benson, Melendez, Josh Thompson, TJ Grant, and Nate Diaz. So that's a loaded top six. That's arguably the deepest in between 145 and 155, 170. I think you go argue either way and say that's a really deep weight class. It's tough. And my gut tells me that if you fought Josh Thompson again, I don't know who I'd pick because I just saw him with him the first time, but he's never going to, I don't think at this point, while he showed he still has it and look how good he looked, I don't think he's ever going to be too far. He's still relatively close. And depending on who he fights next and what happens with when Pettis fights again and who he ends up fighting, because he could be two, I could see two wins. But especially since there was the booking over the weekend of, Ruslan Khabibov and Rafael Dos Anjos. So what is, does he go lower? Does he fight
TJ Grant?
Does he fight TJ Grant, who to me seems pegged for Gilbert Melendez? I think that makes just too much sense if he's going to come back at a reasonable time. Does Khabib Nurmagomedov make sense for Nate Diaz, even though he's a little bit lower? If Thompson beats Ben Henderson, do you rematch them so quickly? I don't know.
And there's the issue. He's lost to those top guys. He's lost to Benson in a fight that was, extremely lopsided.
Yeah, straight. He lost every round decisively.
His offense was giving the middle finger and having Fox cut to black. He got knocked out by Josh Thompson and didn't look good at all. Those are the things that you look and you say, well, this guy, what can he really do? When he's on, he's on. When he's off, he's off. And he needs someone that, maybe isn't going to have the smartest game plan.
But even guys,
utilize his weaknesses.
But even, he struggled, in the past. But I would even, against certain guys, I wouldn't rule it out that he can, submit someone off his back. His jiu-jitsu is very, very good. But guys like Benson that are smart about it are the guys that he's really going to struggle with. Because it's not if he was going to fight, who's out of the side of the top 10 wrestler?
I was looking at Pat Healy, but he's coming off a loss.
I mean, if he fights like a Jim Miller or Pat Healy, is it unquestionable that I see him, being able to submit one of those guys? No, I don't. I mean, those guys are a little bit more aggressive and not as, defensive with their jiu-jitsu. But then again, even look at Benson. Benson fought Nate Diaz and took him down repeatedly. And if you said jiu-jitsu for jiu-jitsu, I mean, I think you would probably say that Nate Diaz is better jiu-jitsu than Anthony Pettis. And Anthony Pettis was able to submit Ben Henderson on the first takedown that happened in that fight. So you just, you never know what's going to happen in a fight. It just depending on where the arm placement and everything and whatnot.
However, moving on from this or last week's Ultimate Fighter, obviously the Ben Askren sort of issue has been going back and forth between, we want him, but this happened. He needs to fight a few more fights. He wasn't in our plans. Looks like he's going to sign with 1FC. It's a move that makes me shake my head a little bit, but if there was no other interest, then, what do you do?
Well,
and we never heard anything out of World Series of Fighting, really.
Well, they said they were interested. So, and for me, if I would, like, if I'm Ben Askren, and I want to fight in the UFC, right? I mean, maybe the money in UFC is really, really good, and he is going to be, like, training at Evolve, which is a really, really good camp, probably the best in Asia, and there are some UFC guys that train out of there, like, I think Dos Anjos fights out of there, but World Series of Fighting, if he goes to World Series of Fighting, and he kind of plays the Piper game with Dana White, and he can fight, you know, Usmar Pajares, he can fight John Fitch, Berkman, Steve Carl, he can fight, like, all four of those guys, three of which have fought in the UFC. I would pick him against all three of those guys at this point. You know, he beats guys that have fought in the UFC. And at that point, it'd be really hard not to call him up. I mean, he would have wins that put him justifiably, like, near the top 10. Maybe the money's really good. Maybe Evolve's going to pay him to help coach him with wrestling. I get maybe there's something else at play here that we don't fully know. Because I don't think his contract's going to be up, but... the best two welterweights on UFC's roster right now are Phil Baroni and Roger Huerta. I think it kind of says something about where he's going to be fighting.
And Huerta's not fighting anymore, really.
So. I think the last time we saw him fight, he got soccer kicked.
He did.
I'm fairly sure he got soccer kicked. And before that, he fought War Machine on a regional promotion in Texas.
And I pulled up the 1FC roster. They have, you know, Phil Baroni, a lot of Asian fighters. A lot. They have Kamal Chaloris is back at 170 in 1FC.
Because of, yeah, okay.
Igor Gracie is there. You know, there's not a lot of names. And the point is obvious. If one or WSOF, World Series of Fighting, that's the place to go. It's common sense. You beat Usmar Pajares, a guy that won his last UFC fight but was a dick, so he got cut.
I mean, and even if, I mean, beating Mike Pierce the way he did, that's a statement.
Yeah.
I mean, Johnny Hendricks just fought George St. Pierre, and we don't need to go into that, but Mike Pierce gave Johnny Hendricks fits, and he's given a lot of top guys fits. He was given John Fitch fits for a long time, too. You know? He's a really solid 170-pounder. Look what Pollard did to him. And beating John Fitch to the casual fan is kind of still a big deal.
Yeah, it really is. Now... Before we get into the Ultimate Fighter finale, the UFC Fight Night 33 predictions. This is a big week in MMA. World Series of Fighting takes place this week. Invicta takes place this week. Chris, give me a couple fights that you're looking at and really pique your interest.
Well, we'll start with World Series of Fighting. I really, really am intrigued to see how Lance Palmer does against Georgi Kakarin. Palmer is coming in on short notice to fight for the featherweight title in the World Series of Fighting. If he wins, he's long looked at as one of the top prospects at 145 pounds, but he's kind of struggled in his transition as of late, kind of struggling with guys that he probably should beat on paper pretty easily. So this is a big fight for him. If he wins this, he's got to be getting close to a UFC call. Alpha male guy, Ohio State guy, you know, got a really nice pedigree. And that's kind of where I'm starting, especially considering some of the World Series Fighting card has also been kind of different. And also, Nick Newell is fighting on that card.
Yeah, I think Nick Newell's fight would have been a little more exciting had he been facing his original opponent, whose name... is slipping from me at the time, but it was definitely a big-name opponent. Now he goes up against a relatively unknown again. We have Elvis Mutapchik, who is the former MFC champion, goes up against Jesse Taylor, a UFC or a Ultimate Fighter veteran. And, you know, I do like Palmer. I think that's interesting to see. You know, obviously we're seeing a lot of wrestlers make the switch to MMA, and a lot are having success. Let's see how Palmer does. And Invicta, you do have to look at. I think there are... a lot of exciting fights, but I got really excited for Barb Honchak and Leslie Smith when I watched their road to Invicta. I think that's it has a possibility to be a very exciting fight at 125 pounds, and you know, if Invicta's going to be huge, you know, the UFC is bringing in females MMA. But Shannon Knapp has an outstanding relationship with Dana White. She knows how to run this sport. She knows how to run an organization, and they are doing an amazing job of putting on fights, putting female fighters in a position to succeed, and, you know, just really promoting women's MMA.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They're definitely, you know, worth watching. You know, there's actually a bantamweight that's interesting for the Miriam Nakamoto versus Lauren Murphy. Nakamoto is, like, a very interesting kind of... She's a very, very good Muay Thai. Been doing it for 18 years. She had an Ariel Helwani show over last week, and she's interesting because she definitely looks like she could compete, like, at the high level, but she doesn't... She seems like she has, like, some... Like, one of those fighters that has, like, that idea of, like, winning a lot of different type of, you know, competitions, and, you know, she actually... One thing that would be interesting, like she said, she'd be down to fight Holly Holm. I mean, that'd be fun. I actually think Holly Holm
fights. She is. She does fight today.
And if you haven't seen her fight, do it. She's incredible. She is incredible.
And in case you're wondering, we do have the live stream pulled up. And Leslie Smith just made weight. I assume Barb Honchak will. If she doesn't, then obviously.
And, you know, and also, if, you know, Shane Del Rosario's teammate Carl Esperanza fighting on the Invicta card. And, you know, all prayers out to the Del Rosarios and all of Team Oyama out in California.
No doubt about that. However, are you ready to make our UFC fight night picks? We will do... No?
No, you know it.
We will do the main card. Starts off, Julie Kedzie goes up against a relative unknown, Beth Correa. And first off, I loved Julie Kedzie's reaction during the weigh-ins, if you saw that, as Beth Correa tried to intimidate her and get in her face. She put her hand to her mouth and sort of the "I'm so startled" look, and actually started laughing at her. I have trouble picking a lot of these female fights where we see veterans go up against newcomers that we don't really know, because women's MMA is evolving, but I am picking Julie Kedzie in this fight. She trains out of Jackson's MMA. I have just as much faith that they're as skilled in breeding women's fighters as they are men's, and I think she will earn the victory here.
Yeah, and you want to see someone like her who's been around the sport for so long kind of earn a UFC victory and stick around and be able to make a living. And I do think she gets it done.
Next fight, we have a couple tough bets. We got Dylan Andrews goes up against Clint Hester. Chris, who you got?
You know, this is an interesting fight. I'm not very high on either man. I think they both could be interesting, like, fun fights, but, you know, nothing more. I'm going to go with Clint Hester. I think he's got a little bit more explosiveness in his game. I think he's got a little bit better. I just think he's got more, like, upside to improve fight to fight, while I think Andrews is more closer to, like, a finish of what we know he's going to be. And I think Hester is going to finish him in a kind of a slugfest back and forth.
Yeah, I agree. I'm taking Clint Hester. I think the man throws bombs. You know, he has 7 knockouts in the first round, I believe, actually. The guy's just a beast. Not very high, I guess, after I just complimented him. I don't really think he can make a huge name for himself, but I do think he has a higher ceiling than Dylan Andrews does. Moving on to the next fight, we have Pat Barry, Soa Pelele. Pelele had a little bit of hype coming in with his name as he entered the UFC. Didn't look very impressive. Heard he competed with broken ribs for 3 rounds, but I think that gas tank is an issue to watch. Pat Barry is a very talented kicker, very talented striker. I'm picking Pat Barry. It may be in the upset, but I'm taking him.
Yeah, actually, I don't think this fight's actually competitive at all. There's a couple fights in this card that I think are going to be very, very one-sided. And this is one of them. And the other one, I think, is the next fight up after this. So, but I think Pat Barry, even though he's struggled as of late, you know, hasn't kind of been more prone to get clipped a little bit, Pelele is slow, he's plodding, and Pat Barry is just electric on the feet. This fight's going to take place on the feet. Pat Barry is going to... This is going to be one of the heavyweight fights you like to watch, where it's done
within a round. Where it ends quickly?
Pat Barry will get it done within a round. If I was doing a lock of the night tonight, which I'll just do it, this is my lock of the night, that Pat Barry gets it done early.
Really, my lock of the night would be the co-main event. We have Ryan Bader goes up against Anthony Perosh, the Hippo. And I am taking Ryan Bader, obviously. Listen, he almost beat Glover Teixeira. Did he get caught? Yes. Glover Teixeira has the ability to somehow eat punches. He gets rocked with them, but he hasn't been knocked out yet. Obviously, the criticism is he gets hit too much. But Ryan Bader, I still think, is, you know, he's a talented fighter. Maybe not the elite light heavyweight that we once thought he was, but he's definitely better than Piroshkin here as a victory.
Yeah, this is a waiting. This is a patient beta waiting to KO Piroshkin. He should be able to stop any Piroshkin takedowns. He's definitely got more tools on the feet. Can't see him not finishing this fight with a big overhand punch.
Co-main event, we have Shogun against James Tehuna. Chris, who you got?
Why you gotta make me go first?
I'm making you go first because I know my pick.
And you know I don't know my pick.
Yep.
Okay, there's two ways I think this fight plays out. If Shogun shows up, like, even relatively on point, he should beat Tehuna. Tehuna's a pretty one-dimensional guy, if we're being real. You know, if we're being honest about this. He hits really hard and he can move forward and he's not very good off on the ground. But Shogun has just so slowed down over the past few years. Just, you can tell all the wars and the knee surgeries have just changed him as a fighter. And he's going to be best at this fight if he can get off his kicks and he gets popped and he can move around and he's not just kind of waiting in his spots and just kind of winging shots like we've seen in other fights. I envision this fight kind of... I think he's probably going to get dropped at some point, right? I mean, I kind of have to feel like he's meant to get hit at some point very hard. I'm going to put my... I wouldn't bet my last dollar on it, but I'm going to...
Give me a name!
I'm going to go with the old war horse. I'm going to pick Shogun. I don't say that with much confidence. I think it's a very real chance he just gets whooped. But Shogun, some sort of... let's say, I think he'll clip... I think he'll clip Tehuna at some point.
Here's my issue with Shogun. He's slow. Obviously, the knees are not what they once were. He's been in wars. It's broken his body down. He doesn't look in shape at 100 or at 205. He's talked about dropping to middleweight. When you talk about dropping a weight class, normally that means there's something going on at the other weight class that you don't feel you can compete. I think James Tehuna is too big, too strong, and he's got bombs in his hands. It's not to say that Shogun can't win, but I am taking James Tehuna in this fight.
Do you not? You know, well, there has been some media that picks him. Luke Thomas from MMA Fighting picked him. You know, and you got to remember, Shogun is coming off the most shock, probably a very shocking loss.
He got submitted by a man that once said he would never pull guard because that would be a man lying between his legs.
Yeah.
So
maybe he'll be fired up for this. You know, you just don't know. But we'll probably, for me, one of the more probably the most interesting fight on the card is that Shogun to be a fight.
Now to the main event, we have Mark Hunt against Bigfoot Silva. I'm gonna break it down really simply for you. Bigfoot Silva is big. He has a very big chin. He doesn't use his reach well. He needs to get it to the ground. Mark Hunt's takedown defense has improved, and when Mark Hunt punches you with a left hook, you drop. I'm not a big fan of Mark Hunt, but he will knock out Antonio Bigfoot Silva.
Yeah, I do agree with this. You know, Bigfoot Silva has this, like, really obvious path to victory where he could just, like, push up against Mark Hunt and, like, just wear him out and finish him that way. And he says as much that he's going to submit him and that he wants to fight, you know, I can't remember
who. Josh Barnett.
He wants to fight Josh Barnett. So, I don't think that happens. But I just... I haven't seen him try to wrestle someone. You know, he stood with Overeem, which didn't make sense. In the end, it worked out, but, you know, it wasn't the smartest strategy. You know, stood with Kane. I mean, you're not going to take Kane down, but I just don't... I don't think he can get inside. I don't think... I think Hunt, as much as he's a... Like, his run is... Like, that magical run is over. I think he's going to hit him with a bomb at some point. I mean, and Mark Hunt does keep coming. Even when he's tired. Look at the Stephen Struve fight. He was tired, and he ended up breaking Stephen Struve's jaw. So... I think Mark Hunt, I think KO, but this could easily turn into a very sloppy, sloppy fight.
Yeah, it could definitely be a very sloppy, sloppy fight. Is this going 5 rounds?
Oh, hope not. I say, if it's probably going to get finished either way.
Oh, it's getting finished either way, but if it goes 5 rounds, then everyone better start praying that this one ends early. However, that is the end of our show. Felt good to be back after a week off. We did have to drop the food weight that we obtained over Thanksgiving. However, check out the fights this week. There are a lot of good ones. Holly Holm.
Good weekend to be an MMA fan.
Yeah.
Really good weekend to be a sport fan in general, actually.
Yeah, and you should be an MMA fan. It's un-American if you aren't. Obviously, you can check out Chris on Twitter at CWM Rights. Check me out on Twitter at Nikolai_Gianti. We will be back next week.